Forestry, she surveyed about 350 Lagos residents. She asked about their experiences with flooding and if they'd consider moving in response to the threat. More than two-thirds said that they're willing to relocate. But most of those who said that they'd consider moving did not want to leave Lagos. Many have family, friends, and jobs there.
Over half of the people who I surveyed, they expressed intentions to relocate within the city.
Eko says there are lots of news stories about how climate change will increase migration to the U.S. and Europe. But her research indicates that many people, if given a choice, would prefer to move to safer areas nearby. So she says it's important for cities to work to prevent flooding and to support people who need to move but want to stay close to home. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain, BC, we are CJSF 90.1 FM, and we are diverse, independent, and yours.
Today on Wings, our program is titled, The Food Beneath Their Feet, Africa's Indigenous Foods Revival.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Anastasia Chariot is a plant biologist from Kenya. She started her career in Haller Park near Mombasa. Diana Wanyonyi interviewed her there in an old quarry now converted to a model farm.
My name is Anastasia Chariot. I came in here as a scientist. I completed my master's degree in conservation biology in South Africa. And then I joined Haller Foundation with the idea that we wanted to establish indigenous vegetable farming. Now, indigenous vegetable farming, what do I mean by that? Plants that are edible, that are eaten by communities, have been eaten by communities in the past, Kenyan communities especially. And those plants originated in Africa, that tropical African environment, and have been found here for hundreds of years, some even thousands. There was evidence found in Egyptian tombs that some of those plants that we have here were actually being used by the Egyptians and the Egyptian pharaohs over 4,000 years ago. So these are plants that are well adapted to this environment. These are plants that have gained resistances to the African pests, that have gained resistances to the African climate in terms of heat, in terms of where the droughts are. They evolved to suit the African soils wherever they've established themselves. And these are plants that are growing naturally within our virgin forests, not just virgin forests, even disturbed areas. These are plants that actually do well on roadsides. As you drive across the African roads, you find them. So they're doing well without the need of human input in terms of nutrient addition to the soil, in terms of watering them. They actually found a way to succeed as plants within our African environment without us actually having to do anything with them. Now, these plants also are highly nutritious. The plants that we have collected, most of them, we have their nutritional values already tested and established. Many of them are more nutritious than your average vegetable, spinach and sukuma wiki and the rest of them. And most of them have medicinal value attached to them. So they have been used by various communities around Africa to treat one thing or the other. So they do well in your environment, they fill your stomach with nutrients, and at the same time they treat you for one thing or the other. Why don't we actually, as a country, why don't we rely on these as our source of food? staple food rather than relying on monocultures and commercial crops that are not actually African. So what we're trying to do is trying to establish indigenous farming, farming indigenous crops, from two perspectives. First of all, from the perspective of the communities that we work with here in Mombasa, at the coast of Kenya. We have communities which are aware of these plants that we're using here as vegetables. These plants actually grow within their own environments. The older members of those communities are aware of this as food. They even use them as food. But for some reason, the transfer of that knowledge to the younger generation has not actually been done well. So younger members of our communities don't even know that they're working on their food, literally. And it's a shame that sometimes you'll hear that people are going hungry when actually right outside their houses there's actually food. But because of that lack of knowledge, we are not able to actually feed ourselves. Now, one of the things that indigenous crops and indigenous plants are able to do, and I believe this is a personal opinion, is it is one of the key answers to food insecurity in Kenya. Because if we all knew what grows outside our houses was food, then we wouldn't go very far to look for our food. We would be able to nurture those plants within those environments where they're doing well anyway, so we wouldn't need any fertilizer inputs. We wouldn't need a lot of water. We wouldn't need a lot of even land to actually grow them, because they actually grow wildly. So we established this project, first of all, to collect non-plants that are edible. We started off by collecting what is known at the coast, because we are located in the coast of Kenya. Then we realized that a lot of things in Kenya coast are also eaten in other parts of the country. So we went to collect as much as we possibly can from the whole of Kenya. We have established that they're all indigenous, based on records, and that they're all edible. Currently, we have about 26 or 27 indigenous vegetables growing on these plots in this area. We have tasted all of it, actually eating the crops. We have grown all of them to maturity. We have harvested from most of them. There's one or two that we haven't harvested yet. So it's not something that we just talking about, but it's something that we've done practically. We have the plants, we've grown them, we've harvested them, and we've eaten them. So what do we do next? We have to find a way of actually marketing the crops and the use of these crops back to the community. Now, how do you do that? When we at the Hala Foundation demonstration farm have any material that we want to share with our communities, one of the ways that we do that is we bring the community to us. We teach them how to plant it, we teach them what this is, we teach them how to grow it, and we teach them how to use it as well. We show them and we tell them the benefits of using indigenous vegetables, and hopefully in a few years' time, then we will get actually people using it again. The other thing that we're using is our farmers app that goes farther than just our community. It is a tool that is worldwide. It is on the World Wide Web. And it is a tool that can be seen and used by the rest of Africa. We have showcased all of our vegetables, indigenous vegetables, on the app. And on our Facebook page, we show an indigenous vegetable of the week. And if you actually follow that, then you'll get an idea of what you have locally, because we have pictures. And you might recognize some of those vegetables and realize, oh my, I actually have vegetables you know, outside my house. We try and tell you the nutritional values of those vegetables. If there are ways that we can help in terms of planting them, we have the platform on the farmers app on the notice board where we can communicate with farmers from whatever part of the world. We are also working on writing an indigenous vegetable handbook. As a hard copy, we can write more, and we're able to distribute it as well.
Since this interview was recorded, the book Anastasia Chariot referred to has been published under the title Proudly Kenyan Edible Plants. The Haller Foundation's farming app has been configured for mobile phones. It offers short instructional videos in Swahili showing how to plant, tend, harvest, and use both native plants such as okra and imported ones like tomatoes. You're listening to Wings from the Women's International News Gathering Service. Here's our reporter from Mombasa, Diana Wanyonyi.
What is the role of women in agriculture?
Women are key in agriculture, especially in African settings. Information we have on indigenous vegetables mainly came from women. They knew how to mix the vegetables. We found out that a lot of the vegetables that we have are actually eaten in combination. And a lot of these vegetables that are eaten together actually tend to grow together. You'll find that on the onset of rains, you will suddenly have a bloom of telekushe, whose scientific name is Asistasia gangetica, with another plant that is called zadza, which comes from the Comelina family, that grow together, and you'll find that they're eaten together. And the beauty of these foods that are actually eaten together and eaten in combination is you're getting a combination of nutrients. At the same time, you're also getting a combination of medicinal values. So, you know, your granny doesn't get sick so much compared to how you get sick. They don't get diabetes. They don't get cancers. And I believe it's because they were eating food that was highly nutritious and at the same time medicinal. And we try not to say that this thing will actually heal you from this in terms of the vegetables that we have. But the good thing with science is a lot of things that were known in the past to have some medicinal value or the other, you will find that somebody somewhere has actually researched on it. And people have found the active ingredients within a lot of our indigenous crops. And we know that those active ingredients have been known to treat specific diseases. For instance, there's a fruit called mtserere, whose botanical name is Hoslundia opposita. Hoslundia is very well researched in West Africa and has really good promising active ingredients against things like malaria, and has been used in the past for various things. I mean, there's a whole list of things that Hoslundia has been used to treat. But when you then look at the science of extractions that have happened in labs from a scientific perspective, actually it has a lot of active ingredients that are really highly medicinal. You know, the old people were not just doing, well, they may have started off doing, like, you know, trials and errors, but by our grandmother's generation, they knew what they were doing. Now, back to women in agriculture. Women connect the soil to the mouth, literally. They would nurture the crops, especially in a lot of smallholder farming in Africa in general. A lot of smallholder farmers are women. They till the soil, they look after the soil, they plant the crops, they weed the crops, they do their best to nurture those plants to the level that that plant is food, they harvest the food, they cook the food, so they process the food at the end of the day, and they're the ones who put the food on the table for their families to eat. So they're a key connection between our environment and literally our mouths and our bodies. And One of the things that we believe here is including women as much as possible in training. Because if a woman understands it, she'll make it work. If a woman believes in something, she'll bring that thing to life, literally. And we believe that if women realize the importance of indigenous plants in terms of food in Kenya, then that is where the difference will come. Women have a lot of knowledge. They hold a lot of knowledge. And because they're the ones who practically practice, especially a lot of smallholder farmers, they're the ones who actually practice farming, they understand a lot about taking care of the soil. We use purely organic farming practices. So we try and establish practices that are practical, practices that can be handled by women, so it's not a lot of heavy work. But the things that we try and teach are things that anybody can do. We go all the way from compost making, how to use your farmyard manure and maximize the nutrients that come out of it, how to store water, how to recycle water, how to use a small piece of land effectively. The cooking practices that we use are also environmentally sustainable, but also practices that produce and don't waste on nutrients, you know, because some things you'll cook until you kill them. But we try and teach the whole process of taking something from a seed until it is back to the level where it is actually being eaten or being used. And the entire process, we try and do it as much environmentally friendly as we possibly can. And farming in general is not just crop farming. I know that I've spoken a lot about indigenous plant farming, but that has to be done in combination with poultry farming, in combination with livestock farming, in combination with fish farming, because the whole system works together. It is actually putting together a functioning ecological system that is as clean as possible. So if we can put together our entire system that works organically, then we feel that that is going to be more beneficial to the families that we would like to improve. It is going to be more beneficial to our environment. It is going to be more beneficial to our economy. It is going to be more beneficial in so many ways to the future generation. We are looking after the land, we are looking after the environment, we are looking after the animals around, and just integrating that entire system in such a way that it works and functions is what we would like to see at the end.
Okay, what are some of the challenges that you are facing?
The main challenge that I faced right at the beginning is collecting a knowledge base. Knowledge is power. And where there's no knowledge, people perish. So that lack of knowledge of indigenous vegetables that were actually used from the past was my biggest challenge. Having to go to the communities, speaking to the older women, asking questions. I always take the approach of asking rather than telling. And I've been fortunate because people are willing to give information. And then once you found information, finding material. So a woman would tell you that, oh, I used a certain plant, or my granny used to use a certain plant, or we used to use these fruits, or we used to eat these fruits when we went out herding. You know, that's what the men would tell you. And we used to actually eat berries, things like that. But then, okay, now can we go to where those berries are? Do they still exist? A lot of environments have been degenerated already. And unfortunately, some of those vegetables and plants are removed from those environments because the forests are degenerated. They have been cut down for one reason or the other. Urbanization has happened. You know, the things that come with lifestyle changes that happen within the country at the moment. So when we originally started, we started with Mombasa only. But we realized that we need to go searching on a wider range of places. And that took me back home. I come from the Rift Valley. And I've gotten a lot from the women there, from the older people there. The good thing is once you start talking about what you're doing, tell people the good things that will come out of it, whoever has information will give it to you. It might take a while to collect. But we're grateful because what we've collected so far has been good. Mm-hmm. It's a really good feeling to be able to work within indigenous vegetables. It really is. The next challenge would be then taking the information that we have now collected and passing it on. We hope we can take it on to a point where at least majority of the plants gain some sort of value within our population market. The reason why I say that is I believe that when something actually has value, then people will want to look for it. The reason why everyone plants maize is because you can sell maize at a certain value at the end of the day. And so it becomes an income generator. Now, if you have 100 acres, what you choose to plant on those 100 acres is usually, not always, but usually determined by how much money you can get from what you plant in those 100 acres. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if you give something value, then it will also gain popularity in terms of being used as a plant crop and being used as a vegetable, mm-hmm. as a food. So our challenge is how do we give these vegetables value that can translate? We know the value in terms of nutrition. We know the value that it holds in terms of being medicinal. We know the value it holds in terms of our environment. But how do you then turn it and make it a valuable thing in terms of money? Because when it has monetary value, then automatically it will be used. Mm-hmm. So that is our challenge. Because of the collection that we have and because there's now a knowledge base, there's an increase in, first of all, people just wanting to know, what is that? What can it do for me? Somebody came and asked about his father had a problem with diabetes, and he came and asked me if there was a vegetable that actually has been known to treat diabetes. I told him what we have, and I told him that is what is popularly used. There's literature that relates to its use against diabetes, and they've gone and tried it, and they haven't complained. So we hope that has been good. We have somebody else who's trying another vegetable at the moment. There's literature written on it about its use for diabetes as well. But the good thing with this one is that somebody has actually even done doses of it in terms of its use and how it will reduce diabetes. And somebody else is trying it for personal benefit. There's some as well that are indigenous to Kenya that are being used internationally. There is a lifestyle change that is happening within the West. And people are going back to trying to find organisms that are beneficial to their health. For instance, we have a plant here that is called potulaca. In the coast, older people use it as a vegetable. It is a very drought-tolerant plant. And funny enough, it is actually planted as a cash crop in Europe and in the Americas, yet it is indigenous to Africa. It is a plant that grows very quickly. It's very high in omega-3 fatty acids. Literature states that levels of omega-3 fatty acids in that particular species of potulaca is on the same level as that of food from the sea, as in fish. And to think that in terms of the Kenyan eye and in terms of our cultural past, when you see someone in Kenya eating potulaka, you feel like, oh man, they are so poor that they cannot afford food. Yet, the very same thing, from a scientific point of view, is highly, highly nutritious. It is really good brain food. It is high in vitamin E. I mean, the potential for potulaca is so high that it has been captured in Europe and America, and farmers plant it as a crop. It's mind-boggling. There's so much that we can do with what we have that already lives here. And things like potulaca, it's so drought tolerant that it's the only thing that remains when there's nothing else. Yet to us, it's a notorious weed that is only eaten by poor people. I mean, how's that possible? We really have some really good stuff that is available to us for free. We don't have to buy any of those things. In fact, everything that we have in our indigenous plant area, we actually foraged or got from seed somewhere. We have not spent a cent to actually get any of these plants to actually plant. We have not bought anything. We have not bought any seed. We didn't buy fertilizer. We used compost manure. When we cleared this area, we made a compost heap. The only thing that comes from outside is water, because we use electricity to pump water. That is the only input that we actually have on this land. Mm-hmm. Now, also, farming can be done without land. It can be really technical if you tell somebody that. But in all honesty, if you have a piece of land that is less than an acre, and you use that land effectively and in an integrated way, in the way that I was saying, that you set up a system that works within each other. When you go through this farm, you will see integrated systems where you have a fish pond, and on top of that you have a construction that has a chicken house. And that fish pond, the water that comes out of there goes to your vegetable patch, and therefore you're watering your vegetables with nutrient from the fish. It's a system that works together. You don't need land. In fact, you will see one of our urban settlements where somebody has put tires on the roof of a slum house, and in the tires you've just put compost and you've planted your vegetables. Right in there as well is a small fish pond. Mm-hmm. There's vegetable patches within there. There's a water collection system within there. There's an effective cooking system within there. And everything literally within very few meters. Mm-hmm. And that slum dwelling, that person does not have land besides the land on which that house is built. Mm-hmm. Yet that person can eat vegetables, can eat fish. That person can actually have water. There's a well, there's a water collection system at the bottom there. And that is an entire life that is running with somebody actually having a full nutritional life, you know? Mm-hmm. Yet they don't have land.
Anastasia Chariot developed the Haller Foundation's Indigenous Plant Program. She is now a program officer for the African Women's Agribusiness Network and a consultant on biodiversity conservation, climate-smart agriculture, and value chain development for indigenous vegetables. She is based in Mombasa, Kenya. Diana Wanyonyi conducted the interview for Wings. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or visit our website wingsradio.org/WordPress. We also have a daily news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, host of the International Speakers Series at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's all one word, maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.